Radio CSS Media,
your source for family-centered content.
RadioCSS.com.
And now, Audio Theater Central.
Oh, hi there. I'm John Avery Whittaker. But most folks around here call me Whit.
My name is Finian Jones, and you are...
Hello, I'm Dave Arnold, your host for Focus on the Family Radio Theater.
Hey everybody, I'm JD.
And I'm Roy.
And I'm Andrew. We're your hosts for Audio Theater Central.
Welcome everybody to episode 28.
Welcome back. We are so glad that you have come to join us again.
Yes.
Hope you had first show of the new year.
Yes, first show of our new year. Hopefully you had a great new year.
And we just want to say thank you to the Mayans for not letting the world end when their calendar end. We appreciate that.
Exactly.
We are very grateful to still be here.
Yes.
Yes. And Andrew is an old married man now.
Old married man.
Yeah. Yes. That's right. This past Saturday, why would I be here when I should be off on my honeymoon?
That is dedication,
Andrew. We just want to thank you for your dedication to Audio Theater Central and canceling all plans that you have to come and record.
We know yes.
Well, as we said, we want to thank you for taking the time to join us again. We've got a lot of stuff going on in this episode. We're going to review Focus on the Family Radio Theater's production of Oliver Twist. We got some listener feedback coming up, and I'm sure we've got a newscast as well.
Yes.
But before we get to that, I wanted to mention that the end of 2012, I was able to go to Adventures in Odyssey, or to Focus on the Family, and tour the Wits End area of Focus, and got lots of pictures, and so there's a blog post on our website, audiotheatercentral.com. You can go check that out, see all the pictures, and if you've never been there before, go check it out, and maybe it'll entice you to go visit.
Yes, if you are interested, and I don't see why anybody would be interested in that. I mean,
I can't imagine.
Come on, really?
And you can, at the famous What's In There, you can get some Wad Fam Chalk Sods.
Exactly.
Like those we consume this very AM.
Exactly. Check this out, folks. And so, if you don't know what that is, it stands short for a world famous chocolate soda. And so, this morning we had the privilege of actually having a Wad Fam Chalk Sod. Our master producer man over here, JD, made them. And they were excellente.
Definitely.
Yes. So
pictures in the show notes.
Yeah, there'll be pictures and might even a recipe, you know, we'll throw up.
Exactly.
Can't really taste them. Not the ones we had anyway.
No, you can't taste ours, no.
You should be able to make your own.
Yeah, yeah.
However.
Yeah.
Probably precisely. Be preferable to tasting ours.
You can't taste mine. I drank all mine, so.
Yes.
Anyway, we digress. Focus on the Family has re-released the audio drama episodes that eventually morphed into the series that we all love today, Adventures in Odyssey. This collection is called Family Portraits and is now available for purchase. The Odyssey team is also releasing an album which features favorite episodes of the actors over the past 25 years of the show. It features episodes such as A Name, Not a Number, Silent Night, and The Day Independence Came. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for the news this time. I'm Roy, reporting for Audio Theater Central.
Thank you, Roy. You are an amazing newscaster, so thank you for casting the news.
Yes, hopefully I cast it very far.
Oh, cast it far enough so you could hear it.
Exactly. Well,
anyway, yeah. So,
with the help of the internet, this actually is being cast far and wide all over the world.
Yes, all the way to the moon.
We've received things from all over the world, so yes. We know that our voices are being heard very, very far.
Precisely.
I didn't know I was this loud, but...
So we are going to spend the next several minutes talking about Oliver Twist. This is a fantastic audio drama, which Andrew is going to be so kind as to give us an overview of.
Hmm. Well, if you're looking from above, you see a CD case, and it has a two words, says Oliver Twist, and a little young boy running through the streets of London. That is my overview. Now, the underview is kind of hard, because all I can see is the bottom of the table.
Yeah.
So that's not very effective. Is there something else you're looking for, JD?
Yeah, just read.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Your script.
I'm ad-libbing. I apologize. Okay. Oliver Twist should not have survived his difficult beginnings. Cruel and oppressive forces worked against him at every turn. Yet a persistent hope gave him the courage to pursue the truth of his life. Faithfully retold in this powerful full-cast audio production, Oliver Twist captures the compassion, corruption, and redemption of Oliver's world in 19th century England, and gives it a fresh relevance to our world today. This audio drama tells the story of a young orphan sent from a child farm to begin life in a workhouse. After committing the unpardonable offense of asking for more food, Oliver is sent off to apprentice with a coffin maker whose wife mistreats him. He runs away to London, where he meets the artful Dodger and Fagin, who trains kids to be pickpockets. Despite his many trials and hardships, he finally gets his happy ending, bringing hope for redemption to all around him.
And we did play this sample or this promo of the production when we interviewed Paul McCusker about this drama several episodes ago, episode 22, if you want to go hear that interview. Very insightful stuff from Paul. But we're going to play this again, just to kind of give you a little taste of this drama. And it's that actual scene, which Andrew just referenced, about asking for more food, the unpardonable.
The room in which the boys were fed was a large stone hall with a copper pot at one end, out of which the master, dressed in an apron for the purpose and assisted by one or two women, ladled the gruel at mealtimes. Of this festive composition, each boy had one helping and no more, except on occasions of great public rejoicing, when he was given 2 ounces and a quarter of bread besides. Oliver Twist and his companions suffered the tortures of slow starvation for 3 months. At last, they got so voracious and wild with hunger that one boy, who was tall for his age and hadn't been used to that sort of thing, hinted darkly to his companions that unless he had another basin of gruel per diem, he was afraid he might some night happen to eat the boy who slept next to him. He had a wild, hungry eye, and the younger boys believed him. A council was held. Lots were cast who should walk up to the master after supper that evening and ask for more. And it fell to Oliver Twist.
Go on, Oliver. You know what you have to do.
What are you doing, Oliver? Why have you left your seat?
Please, sir, I want some more.
What? What did you say?
Please, sir, I want some more.
More? More? I'll give you more, you scamp!
No!
Come here! Stop this at once!
Oh. Master Elkins,
what is the meaning of this?
Meaning? I'll tell you the meaning.
Oh. Amazing.
Man. That doesn't want you make you, like, go out and buy it, like, right now. I don't know what will. That's just... Other than our review, like wanting to make you go buy it, that right there, you know.
Yes, that's an amazing story. Mm.
Of course, based on the novel by Charles Dickens, this is an extremely long drama. almost 6 hours. It's on 5 CDs, but you're going to enjoy every single minute of it.
As we discussed this, we recalled that the only audio drama that even, well, I think it's about as long, maybe a little bit shorter, is the At Home in Mitford story. That's the only other audio drama that Focus on the Family's ever done that's been this long. But it's well worth it because it is very good. They were very, very faithful to the book. Right. And kept everything, and even some of the words were taken, like the wordage was taken directly out of the book. So yes. It was really cool.
And it was dramatized and directed by Paul McCusker, who just is an amazing writer. But when we interviewed him about this, we talked to him about using the verbatim passages from the book. And so, like I said, you'll want to go back and listen to that. Especially if you've heard this drama, you want to go back and get some of the behind the scenes from Paul, but that was in episode 22 of ATC. But another thing that he mentions in that interview is how he used the narration. There's a lot of narration. I mean, there's long, as you just heard in that clip, there was almost a minute and a half there of just narration, and that happens over and over throughout the production. To me, sometimes it took away a little bit from the story, but I see why they did it. Do you guys have any thoughts on the whole narration thing?
I like the narrator himself and the narration of the whole thing. I mean, I think it helped the story go along, and for me listening to it, and as like a little side note for like the narration thing, I didn't realize it was Charles Dickens actually narrating the story until the very end. I mean, we don't find that out till the very end in the credits.
Yes, and
right. Well, not him.
Right.
Actually.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, we pulled up some sound clips, like, from years ago, before they even had recorded.
From 1830.
From 1830, yeah.
They found the CDs.
They found the USB drives. They found these USB drives. And it was Charles Dickens.
And the Mayans had done this.
That's right. They were like, Oliver Twist, A Christmas Carol. You're like, yes. Let the Dickens.
Okay. Yes, exactly. No, we, again, Roy, how often we digress? Yes. Poor JD puts up with us is amazing.
No, but I did not notice that. It's really unclear. There's no way to tell that that's supposed to be Charles Dickens narrating the story because it's never mentioned. And then when Dave Arnold's going through the credits, then he mentions that.
And it kind of makes sense, too, because, you know, why not take the author and have him be the narrator? But there isn't really any hint that that's who it is.
Right.
But I think it's cool that they put that in the credits, that it's actually, you know, this is supposed to be an actor playing Charles Dickens who is narrating the story.
Which kind of reminded me of Lifehouse Theater's Misadventures of Tom Sawyer, how they had Mark Twain narrating that.
Exactly. I thought of... I was thinking about that too. I think it's a neat idea. I think it's pretty cool.
Didn't they have C.S. Lewis narrating Screwtape too? Or did it? No, it was just the beginning.
Just the beginning.
That's what it was.
It was the beginning. They had C.S. Lewis, and then the rest of it was.
It wasn't the story.
There was no narration for the rest of it.
That's right.
Yeah. Which that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that before. But we're not reviewing Screwtape.
No.
So.
Well, that's probably because there's plenty of monologue in Screwtape.
Right. Any more would be well.
Now. One thing that I really thought was cool, and I told Andrew this the other day, it's going to be very hard to separate the Charles Dickens work from this drama because they kept them so closely together. I mean, they really stayed true to the source material, so it's going to be kind of hard to differentiate like what is the result of Paul McCusker's work,
right?
And, you know, but this is definitely a Dickens point, but it seemed like in a lot of instances the names are totally representative of the characters' personalities, such as Mr. Bumble,
right.
Mr. and Mrs. Sourberry.
Right.
You know, so it just shows that what a good storyteller Charles Dickens was.
Right.
Right. It's almost allegorical, but it's like very faint. You have to really... It's almost like he picked the names to be sort of real sounding, but at the same time, like you said, depict... Yeah. Some aspect, at least, of the character.
And not every one of them, but even Fagin. I mean, that name just... Yeah. It just sounds like a
right
evil old man.
Exactly, it does. It sounds perfect. And Speaking of Fagin, the actor that played Fagin was absolutely amazing, especially in Fagin's final scene, which we will not cover.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. That guy is amazing. Henry Goodman is his name, and he did a fantastic job.
I was very impressed with the acting.
The whole thing was just full of great acting. I mean, you focus on the family, you know, they go. And there are some like reappearances of actors we've heard before.
Yes.
And right. Like,
well, there were a lot of familiar names in the credits. Of course, Philip Sherlock is in here.
Right.
Yes.
But we were talking earlier, we were talking about Nancy and how she did an amazing...
Yes.
The girl. The other actress.
Honeysuckle Weeks is her name. She was amazing.
My goodness.
She was in that part. I mean, you could feel
exactly.
The feelings that she was going through in each scene when she tried to be, you know, brave and stand up to Bill Sykes. And, I mean, you could... I was just blown away by that performance.
It was amazing. And that's actually almost exactly what I was going to say about being able to feel her character very well.
Right.
She just did an amazing job at acting. It was very impressive.
Well, talking about being able to feel the character and whatnot, they really put you in the character of Oliver Twist,
right.
Nationally.
And I think this is something that's due to Paul McCusker's work. Because he kind of cut out some of the other extraneous things that go on and centered everything about... everything was about Oliver. And of course, that's the way the book was written, parts of it, whatever. But the way that he adapted it, everything was so centered around Oliver that he just felt horrible for this kid.
Yeah.
I mean, it was to the point where... we were listening to it together. I was not married at the time we were listening to it, but my wife and I were listening to it together, and she was like, oh, every time something good would happen to Oliver, she was like, oh, nope, it's not going to last. He's going to get captured again. Right. Something's going to happen again.
You just have this expectancy of something is going to happen, you know?
Cause, exactly.
I mean, the very first few hours of this drama, it's nothing but gloom and doom, you know?
And that's exactly what Dave Arnold says in the beginning.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. It's just dark and...
Yeah, it's very dark.
Horrible.
It's evil. I mean... And
you can almost feel the evil. It's it's bad.
Yeah.
It's good, but it's bad.
Right.
But they even go to some intense scenes. I mean, it's in the book. So, I mean, but as far as Oliver getting beat, as you know, because he asked for more and whatnot, and
they don't hold back.
Hold back on the violent part of it, even into some serious, intense scenes later on in the story that we won't get into. We'll just leave you hanging.
Exactly.
but anyway, just some serious, just violent, scenes that they don't shy away from.
Yeah, and
not at all.
Every single cast member did a phenomenal job, but like you said, the ones that really stood out to me was Fagin, Henry Goodman as Fagin, Roy Hudd as Mr. Bumble. I mean, that guy,
the Beetle.
Yeah.
Yes.
You could go into Mr. Bumble. You could just see him as this huge fat dude. You know?
Yeah.
He's just
he struggles to speak because he's so.
It's huge.
Ponderous.
Yeah.
And they say that, and the board is made up of all these fat guys. You know,
exactly.
And you can just hear it, and all that. They're just
They do. They sound like they're having a hard time breathing, they're going to keel over from cholesterol at any moment.
Exactly. Parochial cholesterol moment.
Exactly. Oh, and the use of the word parochial was about to drive me nuts. Yeah. Oh,
parochial. A parish beetle, I'll tell you.
Parochial
I'll eat my
this,
head.
Parochial that, parochial everything. Oh.
Yeah.
The parochial cloak, the parochial grave, the parochial whatever. I mean, everything was belonging to the parish. It was, it was like the people had nothing. You know, one of the scenes that made you just want to cry, and there's just no getting around it, was that scene where Oliver is with the Undertaker, and they go into that apartment
where the dead girl is.
Yes, and the way that father, that was an amazing job of acting too.
The father and the mother, and then
oh my goodness!
I was getting ready to bring up the scene myself. go ahead. It's just like, because Oliver becomes a professional mourner for young children. That's what, you know, from the, he was like living in the Undertaker shop and everything, but.
Because he's been through so much, you know, he looks very mournful. And mm-hmm. so the Undertaker gets this bright idea.
Yeah. And they actually go in and they're measuring and it's just, it is, ugh, so dark. Another.
Yeah. Yeah. And and honestly, the people's who were in power, their attitude was just
right
disgusting. I mean, it's like how, it's something you have to listen to understand what we mean, but.
Yeah.
The lack of any kind of compassion was just, and all in the name of
charity,
under the guise of charity and right. the church and everything. It was
right.
It was awful.
Well, and as we transition from like the overall picture of the drama and start going by scenes, speaking of that portion, as they're going to the churchyard to bury that little girl who had passed, did you notice that they put multiple coffins in each grave? Did you catch that?
Yeah.
They just stack the coffins up and then they just fill in. I mean, no regard for
nothing.
For the poor at all.
No.
And they have that, ostensibly they are the ones that are caring for the poor and the downtrodden.
Right. And it's,
they didn't care at all.
It's cold and rainy outside, whatever. And they let the lady wear a cloak to the funeral and they feel so good about themselves because they let her wear this cloak. But they have nothing and they won't even give her the cloak.
Right.
And yep. it was just like, how could you do that?
Right. They refused to give food to the girl that's deceased while she was sick. And she was like dying.
She
from
starved
starvation.
To death. And they sent her medicine, but she didn't need medicine.
Yeah,
she needed
that's what they
food.
Said. They refused. It was just.
And keep in mind, this is. Charles Dickens is writing. These are factual things. These were things that were happening all over. Right.
And that,
England.
I think, made the story even worse.
Yes.
From the aspect of it being dark, is because of the way they introduced the story and how that is, you know, this is really what was going on. Thinking about that happening to real people more than just an audio drama was depressing. It really was.
And he did that with his stories. He would basically tackle social issues in his day through story form.
And it's almost proven that he was one of the greatest factors for social change in his time. There was almost that story, you know, A Christmas Carol, Great Expectations, all of them. David Copperfield really did have an impact. It wasn't just, you know, a good story that people read and enjoyed, whatever. These things actually made a difference.
Because these were, at least Oliver Twist, possibly the others, I'm not entirely sure, but it was released in a serialized form in newspapers or magazines, you know. So the general population, these people were reading this story, you know. I don't know if it was a weekly basis or what, but I mean, can you imagine, you know, you're basically looking in the mirror at the way your society is as you're reading this on a weekly or daily basis as each portion was released. It just shows how, I mean, he had a desire to see things be different, you know.
Right.
Exactly. And he really did make a difference. That was just amazing. But there were so many scenes that were like that. Although that one really was one of the most powerful, even out of the whole story. That one and probably the very first scene was two of the most, you know, poignant moments because of the way that, you know, the lady's dying, giving birth to Oliver, and the old woman that's her nurse or whatever just steals from her. This dying lady, and she just steals from her right there. Right. It's like, it's horrible.
The corruption was so rampant in all levels of society. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah,
it was almost like anybody entrusted with any kind of position was expected to exploit it to their advantage as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even some of the magistrates in London were like that. Yeah.
Right, and that old scene too, that was, I mean, it wasn't as dark, but at the same time, it was like, this guy doesn't even care, he just wants to get this off of his desk.
Yep.
It was amazing.
The worship.
Yes,
the worship. Your worship.
And there, honestly, it wasn't all dark, and there were some really funny things that happened as well.
For instance, Mr. Brownlow and his friend, now we're unsure if it's Mr. Grimwig or Mr. Grimwick.
Yeah.
But either way, it's got Grim in the name, and it fit his character. He was very cynical, and I love that line where Mr. Brownlow says, "You are uncharacteristically cynical, sir." And he says, "Rubbish. My cynicism is perfectly in character for me, as you well know."
Yeah. Exactly. And he has this great phrase, too.
Yes.
Go ahead and share that with us. you've been waiting for this.
I've been waiting. I'll eat my head. It's hilarious how he says it. You just have to listen to the story. It's just, oh my word, it is so funny.
He's a really good character. Adds a little bit of lightheartedness to the story.
Exactly. It does. You know, even though he's one of the ones that mistrusts Oliver or whatever, and everybody expects everybody else to behave a certain way just because of the way that they were born.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that was very repulsive as well. It was like, you know, there was no, you can better yourself, you can, you know, you can do better if you just work hard, whatever. That wasn't the way it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, you'd work hard, definitely, but you wouldn't get anywhere. Because if you're in a workhouse, you're working for basically nothing.
Right.
It was slavery, just of a different form.
Oh, yeah. And another thing I wanted to mention about the narrator. Did you guys catch that point? Where it's, I think maybe a third or halfway through the story, the narrator makes a comment, something about like, well, you know, in a book, you know, sometimes an author will transition away from the main storyline to another point in time to kind of build suspense or whatever. Those are not the exact words, but it was along those lines.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I did not like that. That really rubbed me the wrong way. It's like,
yeah, we will follow in their tradition and continue. Yeah,
yeah.
And they change over to Mr. Bumble. And
yeah, I actually thought that was kind of novel, the way that Charles Dickens did that. I thought that was kind of cool. Because nobody else admits it. Everybody does it, but nobody says why.
Was that taken from
the book?
You think
that's from the book?
Oh, that was definitely from the book.
It wasn't something that they put in there, like the audio. Like,
oh, yeah, that was. There's no way that wasn't taken from the book.
Yeah,
because that sounded like Charles Dickens, even the way that he writes. You know, that just unless Paul McCusker is just.
I mean, it's
good at sounding like Charles Dickens, but I don't think so.
It's been many years since I read the book, so I wasn't certain, but I didn't really care for that. I think they could have left that out, and just transitioned over. You know,
in an audio drama, it kind of makes more sense to just transition. But I think those little moments in the narration kind of also add a little bit it's kind of taking away from the whole.
What do they call that in theater whenever a cast member references the audience, or what they call it, like breaking the third wall or something like that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I don't think I've heard that expression.
Roy, you have?
Yeah, I've seen it done, too.
You know what I'm talking about,
yeah,
though, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of the same thing that he did here.
Instead of keeping, like, yeah, just
keeping
they
in
actually,
character and
they go to the audience, like,
right,
make you,
yeah,
like, all of a sudden, like, the set breaks and you're taught, the
yeah,
actor.
Right. And well, that and sometimes that fits.
I've seen it
in
happen.
Certain,
yeah.
In certain plays that works or whatever, especially plays that are funny, you know.
Right.
That's a good thing to do. But I don't know. It just seemed kind of, I actually thought it was kind of interesting the way that they actually told you, okay, now we're breaking away from Oliver's life. And he was almost making fun of the way that other authors do it. I thought. That's kind of the way I took it, is that it was Charles Dickens kind of poking fun at the other authors and the sort of set ways that novels go and everything like that, even though he was doing it himself.
True.
And for future reference, it's Mr. Grimwig.
Wig?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
It is super
fast.
Our
crack research team.
I know.
Here at,
we just, at ATC.
Audio Theater Central.
Yeah, I sent it over to him real quick, and they're like, boom, answer. Okay, thank you.
Nice.
In other words, he took the book off the shelf and looked it up.
Are you calling me a cracked up research team? I understand. Just kidding.
No, but another scene that I thought was really powerful, and just all of the elements, the acting, the sound effects, the music, which just brought up the intensity level, was the scene in that old shack with Mr. Monks and Mr. and Mrs. Bumble.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. That was a great scene.
The only thing with that one It was very, I mean, it was very intense, very suspenseful.
Mm-hmm.
But something about the way he reacted to the thunder was almost like a, oh man, really? Like, I think maybe it was overacted just a little. Not much, but just a little bit.
Okay.
But, you know, it sounded very good. It was really cool. But I just thought it was maybe a little overdone. But, I mean, maybe that was the purpose as well, because, I mean, the whole idea was that this guy is furtive and creepy and, you know, he's basically behind some of the things that are going on and, you know, it makes sense that he would be a coward about something so small like thunder or whatever.
Now, if this is going to give away too much of the end, don't bother with responding. But I did not get why he had those fits. It never was answered for me unless I completely missed it. And I listened through the entire thing 3 times. So I don't know, but maybe.
No, maybe I don't think that was ever explained. But it was just when he heard that really loud noises or whatever, wasn't it?
The thunder and stuff. So I don't know.
I don't remember anything about that.
For those of you who have heard it and maybe caught something that we missed, definitely let us know. But I'd love. And by the way, it's called Breaking the Fourth Wall. Not the third wall.
Breaking the fourth wall. Okay.
Yeah, if they broke the third wall, the theater would fall in.
Now, here's a cool thing that I thought was... Oh, well, maybe it's not so cool because I'm an American, but towards the end, you see that their disdain for America.
Their attitude. Yeah,
and
that's right.
We're not going to... Yeah. Because Charles Dickens was not a fan of America. He had visited and was not impressed at all. And so I thought that was so funny how he puts that into his stories. I mean, that was totally his opinion and perspective, but he puts it in. We're not going to say which character it was, but one of the bad guys leaves England and goes to America, and they said...
fitting place for him.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll fit in there, you know? Yeah. So.
It was pretty funny. And the funny thing is that the cultures at the time were kind of similar. I mean, there weren't really workhouses in America, and, you know... Not to be biased or anything, but you really could work your way from the bottom and get somewhere. But,
yeah.
You know, so it is kind of funny that his attitude was that way, but nothing we can do about it.
Exactly. And I thought it was cool that they left it in there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, definitely. This is going to be, you know, it's produced by basically an American company, but they didn't take it out, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
And another really neat scene. Not one of the more powerful ones of the drama, but one that was just a really nice touch was the kind of the reliving of the bookshop errand for Oliver.
That was really cool. I like that a lot. He's like,
yeah, that was very cool.
Go and, you know, here's a 5-pound note. Everything down to the 5-pound note.
Right in front of Mr. Grimwick.
Yeah,
exactly.
I hope you're prepared to eat your head.
Oh, exactly. And that was awful too. And, you know, the first time that happened,
he gave him
the 5-pound, you know, he gives him, you know, when he meets his benefactor and he gives him the 5-pound note and he
Mr.
tells
Brown,
him to
though.
Go. And of course, Oliver's perfectly honest. He's not, does no designs on this man's money or anything like that, but you just knew.
Yeah.
You knew that he wasn't coming back.
Yeah.
And then it transitions, you know, once he is taken, they're like, you can tell they waited up, like all of them. Like they're just waiting for him to come back through the door.
Exactly.
And then Grimwick. It's just like, you know.
And he doesn't even really say, I told you so.
No.
He doesn't, because he sees that his friend really is hurt by this. So, you know, he's sarcastic and cynical and, you know, whatever up to a point. But you can tell that these two guys really are friends. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And he was sensitive to the fact that his friend was actually hurt by this. So he's like, and that was just awful, too. I mean, like, oh.
And that was kind of neat towards another part towards the end when Mr. Brownlow mentions Mr. Grimwick about bringing him into the not really conspiracy,
the
but
final,
you know,
wrap up.
Yeah, and he says he's a bit of an odd character, but he's a very basically
exactly.
He's a smart guy,
yeah.
Right?
We can take this out if we want, but one scene that I thought that was really powerful to me that I thought was really. Powerful, I guess is a good word for it. But it's like where Mr. Grimwick actually goes and to talk to Mr. Barlow.
Brownlow.
Okay, yeah. Mr. Brownlow.
That was actually really good.
Yeah, that was a good scene.
Okay, yeah. Man. It was just
yeah, just the way he was denouncing him and being very straight with him.
Right, he just lays it down and he does.
No fear.
Yeah, and to where Mr. Monk's just like is speechless, you know.
Yeah, and you get the idea that Mr. Monk's is just like cowering and has nothing to say.
Right, right.
Yeah. But that was
we can't go into too much.
It's funny because you know a lot of Charles Dickens stories have that type of character in there.
Hmm.
That person that's just insidious and just evil and always ends up getting their due at the end, which is good.
Well, there was a lot of insidious characters in this one. Yeah. I got to tell you, Bill Sykes.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I was getting ready to mention.
That was just pure evil.
And whoever played him, that was amazing. That was really good acting, too.
My only gripe with that is sometimes when he got down in that real low voice, it was kind of hard to hear him. Hard to understand. So I don't know if that was a production issue or they could have just raised the volume on that, the levels on that just a little bit or not. But it was sometimes a little bit difficult to hear him. But, oh, the guy, every scene that he was in just drenched with evil.
From the moment he walked, from the moment he appears in the drama, everything just takes a turn for the worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's largely because of the guy's acting. I mean, he managed to sound like, by the end of the story, if you don't hate this guy, then there's got to be something wrong with you. No offense. Like, by the time you get to, you know,
hate him in a godly way.
Right, exactly. Strongly dislike. Wish he would turn from his evil ways.
Yes.
You know, but he's so you just feel dirty even listening to him.
Yeah, yeah. Last quote that or line that I wanted to mention is very end. Mr. Brownlow is talking to Mr. Grimwig and talking about watching over Oliver. You know, because you're expecting something to happen to Oliver again, but he's like, you know, I can't watch him all the time. I can't, you know, be hovering over him at all the time. He said, you know, I got to just trust God, and then he says, God and Mrs. Bedwin, capable pair.
She follows him.
Because she's followed.
Yeah, exactly.
She's not going to be going again.
And I thought it was cool how I think in that same scene he says something to the effect that it's obvious that someone else has been watching over Oliver.
Yeah.
And when I had no control over what was happening to him, somebody, you know, was in control. So I thought that was really cool.
And kind of to tag on that, like one thing that I really didn't care about, like that kind of, I know it fits into the story and everything, but with Rose and they kind of jump from Oliver Twist and go into Rose and that one cat's relationship.
Oh, Harry. Yeah.
I believe it was Rose and Harry, I believe was the gentleman's name. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like it just, like the whole story kind of just shifted from Oliver to like them. And I was like, you know, what's this going on? I really didn't care for it. I mean, I understand like it fits in the story towards the end and whatnot, but it's like just. But anyway,
I thought, you know, Oliver's a young kid, and almost every good story has some type of romance in it. So I thought it was kind of appropriate.
Yeah,
and it ended up being kind of key,
right? And that's
towards the end.
Yeah,
yeah. Towards the end, you find.
I can see why you would think it's kind of out of place at that point, but it didn't strike me like that at all.
Yeah,
but I mean, overall, to wrap this up, I mean. This, I think, is an example of a perfect story. I mean, you got all of the elements of a good story just woven together. You got love, betrayal, and mystery, and good versus evil. And I mean, it's just a fantastic tale.
Right. And it's told from a different standpoint because usually you see the fight between good versus evil. And this one, you're almost drenched in the evil and you don't even see the good until...
You're on the evil side. Exactly. Yeah.
Until the very end.
And then you got hope. You know,
yeah.
At the very end,
there doesn't even really seem to be much of a fight at first. Right. It's just like evil is taken the day, and that's it.
Where's the justice? You know, where is it?
And you're looking for it throughout the story. You definitely are wishing that something would happen,
right? Which there's one line that the narrator the narrator says that we talked about before. You know, about how like when bad things happen and it seems like nothing is ever taken care of, but you know, just wait. There's things. You know.
Yeah.
It will not be. Left alone, you know.
Right. So,
but there is hope.
Exactly.
And what you find out.
Yes, hope and redemption.
Hope and redemption. Yeah.
So, final word, absolutely, 100%, two thumbs up, 5 stars, 10 out of 10.
You're rating it 5 stars.
Yep, however many different ways you can say it. This was...
It was.
It was awesome.
It really was.
I mean, the only thing that I would even have anything to say about it is this is the reaction of someone else. So my wife thought that it was almost too dark. It was so intense that at the end of it, she's like, I don't ever want to hear another story from him again because it freaked her out so much.
Wow.
But then I played a different, you know, Christmas Carol or whatever without telling her who it was by. Mm-hmm. And she loved that story. So, you know, we kind of got over it, but it was like, you know, it was so, like I said, just drenched in the bad things that are happening that it's almost like,
yeah.
Oh, man. It's like all the good stuff happens in like 20 minutes mm-hmm. and everything else is just horrible.
Right. The yeah. other 5 hours and
exactly. But it's a very good story. I definitely tremendous.
Top notch. I mean, I'm expecting some awards for this one. I mean, definitely. I mean these guys,
we haven't even really mentioned the music and we don't really want to because we'll John go Campbell. Off on it forever. That's all we need to say. John Campbell.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought that was cool. You know, I thought, you know, because I know they've been using like certain other people, you know, sometimes they use, but I was like, oh, that's neat that they.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just amazing. And I mean, it's kind of hard to wrap this up, but I mean, you have to hear this. If you haven't got it already, there's a link in the show notes. Go grab it. You can get a download or the physical CDs. You've got to get this one. I mean, you get a long car trip coming up. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Oh,
perfect.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
Well, let's jump into some listener feedback.
Please leave your message after the tone.
Hi, Audio Theater Central.
Hey, guys. This is Austin Peachy.
Hello, JD, Roy, and Andrew. My name is Victoria.
Now, yesterday, I received a letter from a big fan.
No time to chat. I've got an email list.
Another package for me today.
No, it's actually just your mail.
Yeah, we haven't done this in a while.
No.
We got a stack of letters here on the desk and comments and whatnot that you have sent to it. So I'm going to take a little time here and read these.
Why don't you go ahead and take that first one there?
All right, let's go with the first. This is
let me read the first one.
Okay.
No, this is good. I like when I'm when I'm shot down out of the sky without any mercy or anything. Just kidding.
Okay, go ahead, Andrew.
Okay, this is this is from Ben, and this was about our Pride and Prejudice review, and I made a mistake, everybody, just so you know. And this guy is very kindly pointing it out. Hey guys, Andrew said that Jane Eyre was written by Jane Austen. It was actually written by Charlotte Bronte. I think that's Bronte. Yes, and that is absolutely correct. I totally forgot that. And that was a good catch because I kind of only mentioned that in passing.
I know. Whenever I saw that come through, I'm like, wow, I didn't even catch that at all. So
I didn't either.
We got some sharp listeners.
Yes, yeah. I didn't even think about it, to be honest. So thank you. I now know more than I used to know.
Next up, we got a comment from Austin Peachy, and he left a comment on episode on ATC 25, live from Adventures in Odyssey, and their 25th birthday party that we were able to attend. And he said, great episode. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Even though I wasn't able to see it in person, I'm so glad I was able to watch it live online. That alone was especially awesome, so I can only imagine how it was actually being there.
Actually, he says that was epically awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, mistake, folks. That alone was epically awesome. So I can only imagine how it's actually being there. Yes, that is.
Yeah, and this next one's fitting. Go ahead, JD.
Yeah, we got an email.
Speaking of epically.
An email from Elizabeth, also regarding episode 25, said, just wanted to let you all know I am jealous of your experience in meeting all those actors. Great show. You guys did awesome. And I especially wanted to notice this last part. This says, sent from my Samsung Epic 4G Touch.
This is so funny. Like, we're getting all these comments, and, like, at the bottom of them, and it's always said, sent from my droid this, sent from... Come on, Apple users. Come through.
Represent.
Represent.
Well, thank you. We have one that's going to represent right here. Email from Michael on the White Gypsy review.
Episode 23.
And he says, hilarious show. I missed the first two parts of the episode, though, and now I really want to hear it. The best news given by Roy thus far is that Adventures in Odyssey is now available on iTunes. Oh, go ahead. That was just added by me. Emphasis added there. I do feel sorry for those who cannot download AIO episodes straight to their phone with one click, with the with the luxury of iTunes being on their phone. Mm. Looking forward to the next show already, and I'm not even done hearing this show yet. Michael, sent from my amazing iPhone. Oh, I like that addition right there.
This is hilarious. So,
go ahead, Roy.
All right, so next up we got... this was Treasures of the Snow.
Yeah, so remember last episode we mentioned we had been looking for where we could find Treasures of the Snow. We had actually three different listeners who emailed us and gave us the information. So Rhonda, Michael, and Camille, thank you very much for sharing that. I'm not sure if it's still up. I don't know when you're listening to this episode, but if you go to moodyradio.org/Christmas and you can listen to it there. And hopefully it's still up when you're hearing this. If not, maybe next year at Christmas time, you can go listen to it again and just play it. And as it's being played, just record it so you can have it for yourself.
Go ahead and read that next one there, JD.
So we got a lengthy email from another Michael. This is not the same Michael. He said, hello, this is Michael again. Remember, you're a very loyal fan, just to distinguish me from the other loyal fans. I love that. I do recall he mentioned that in his previous email. But he said, I did a little research and had the blessing of hearing Treasures of the Snow on the radio shortly after I heard your broadcast. It was being broadcast on Adventures from the Bookshelf, a radio program of Moody Broadcasting that airs previously dramatized literature. Love the program. I listened to it through my TuneIn.com internet radio app. I listened to this and many other great audio dramas through it. So I did not know that TuneIn Radio had audio drama on there. So I use that app to listen to some of the radio stations that I like. So check that out. I know that's available for Android iOS. And Apple, so yep. iOS. So, you know, evidently they've got some audio drama on there. So that's cool.
Yeah.
It's called TuneIn. I mean, you search your app market for that. You'll find it. But he reminded us that Treasures of the Snow is produced by Moody, which I knew that, but I had searched all over the Moody website and it was not available when we had recorded that episode. But and he again gives us the Moody website and says you can go listen to it for free. So they had put it up there after we released the episode. So again, if you want to hear that, go check that link out. We'll put it in the show notes as well. But he continues, as to my favorite Christmas radio dramas, I really like Paws and Tails' program titled The Perfect Christmas Gift. Though this radio audio drama series is geared to a young audience, I like it. So I have not heard that one, but I think we'll start looking into, you know, getting some news on Paws and Tails because I emailed Michael back and asked him, you know, is this something that's worth, you know, following?
It's good.
He said it's really good, and I know you guys had heard it before. So
yeah.
It is actually it's actually really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's excellent.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with it.
And we're inserting all of this into it. This is not Michael speaking still.
But continue, Mike. Yes.
Yeah, he also said, I liked A Marriage Carol by Chris Fabry and Gary Chapman. It is a standalone production, but one of my favorites. I mentioned it the last time I emailed, but you didn't talk about it other than reading my email, and that is true. He did mention that to us before. I just have not had a chance to check it out yet, but I've heard good things about that production as well. And, of course, if it's a one-off production, we don't mind taking a look at that at all. So we'll be looking at that in the future probably. And he also said, if you need to find anything, just email me and let me know. I have a knack for finding lost people and now apparently lost audio dramas online. Keep up the good work, Michael. So
maybe he's a missing persons detective.
I know. Like, you could be hired by the government if you're good. You know.
So thank you for that feedback, Michael, and for again to Michael, Camille, and Rhonda for giving us the info about Treasures of the Snow.
Yeah. Yes.
I would suggest, Michael, that you try to find Amelia Earhart. That would make you very famous. Since you have a knack for it, go ahead. Just find her.
This next comment was brought to us. Melissa, she used the contact form on our website and to leave us some feedback. So, Andrew?
Oh, sure. She says as her subject that she just wanted to say hi. So, hi. And that's all she said. No, just kidding. So she says, I hope you all realize the positive impact you have on so many listeners around the world. I'm a college student from Trinidad in the West Indies and very accidentally stumbled onto your website some months ago. At the time, my sisters and I had just started listening to Lamplighter Theater online and couldn't get enough of it. So I was looking for any and all radio stations that would be airing it, and that's when a thread of your radio show came up. We've been fans ever since. To JD, Roy, and Andrew, along with the rest of the team, I say please keep up the good work and great humor. It's so hard to find great Christian programming, so thanks for being a blessing to us and everyone. God bless and keep you.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yes,
that's very, very cool email. Oh. Thank you, Melissa. That was very encouraging. We appreciate that.
Yes. Yeah. It really made my day when we got that email a few days ago. And so really wanted to say thank you for taking the time to let us know what you think of the show and just to let us know that people are out there listening. You know? Yeah. So it really means a lot.
Yes, that's awesome. Thank you very much.
And if you would like to send your feedback, there are a myriad of ways which you can do that. Mm-hmm. And several of them have been represented here. Mm-hmm. You can use the contact form on our website, audiotheatercentral.com. Of course, the show notes are there as well. And there are a couple of other ways.
That's right. You can leave a comment right there on the show notes. You can also, we have on our website, if you care to visit it, there's a little widget, I think we can call it, probably a little button on the side of the webpage there. It says voicemail. You can click that and just leave us a quick message using your microphone, built-in microphone on your Apple computer.
Yes.
And and Windows computer or whatever kind of computer or whatever. But anyway, the point I'm trying to say is you can leave us a voicemail, and we will be happy to share that with all of our rest of our listeners and love to hear from you. We also have a phone number. And that is 623-688-2770. And if you missed that, just rewind. You can dial it in and say, you can listen to that how many times you want. Anyway, you can call that, leave a voicemail there, or you can text that number. You know, just you're going through the day and you just feel like you need to text us. You're like, hey, guys, love your show, you know. And be happy
or hate
to
your show or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
Just feel free to tell us anything you want.
Yeah, exactly.
But. You can always email directly to feedback@audiotheatercentral.com. And we did have somebody actually text us a while back, a couple of weeks ago, and just said Happy New Year. So,
oh, Happy New Year to unknown
Happy
texter.
Year. Thank you,
Grandma.
Yes, to this nebulous number out there in the sky.
Yeah,
appreciate that.
Thank you.
Oh, speaking of Happy New Year. Happy New Year! Yes. It is a new year. Happy New Year. We did not say that at the beginning of the show. This is our first show. We did say that, but it's our first show of the new year. So happy New Year to everybody.
Yes.
Thank you.
Hope to bring you great programming throughout the next year here.
Yes.
Exactly. And,
yes. HTTP or Java, whatever programming we're talking about.
No. We're actually going to try. You know, don't hold us to this.
Oh, C++. Oh.
We're going to try to put out a few more episodes this year than just one a month. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, don't hold us to it, but we're gonna do our best to try to give you more content this year.
Our ATC New Year's resolution.
Yes.
Exactly. And we all know how those work out. So look forward to it, but, you know, don't have your hopes dashed if we can't manage it.
And there are going to be a few announcements coming up that we're going to be sharing with you, some plans that we have.
Mm-hmm.
For this year. So stay tuned. We'll see you next time, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Congratulations, Andrew.
Audio Theater Central is a production of Radio CSS Media. RadioCSS.com. Them about our plans.
Mm. What the dickens? tell them. Don't tell them.
We're not exactly sure how it's all going to work out yet, but we are planning to do...
Oh.